Blimey. This is one out of a jam jar you got here.
House of Mystery contains demons, angels, elementals, magicians, wizards, apparitions, adult language, and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not enter the House of Mystery.
All right, then. On with the show.
All right, hello, everybody. Welcome to the House of Mystery, a John Constantine and Friends podcast. Be sure to subscribe to us. We are available on Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Just search House of Mystery. A few other murder podcasts might show up. Some serial killer podcasts, but just scroll down and you'll find our John Constantine logo. All right, so in the Cave of Wonders today with me in the studio is David Sabal. Hello, David.
Hello, I'm just, don't mind the salt circle around the studio.
Yeah. You try to protect yourself from demons?
I don't want to get probed.
Well, unless it's a hot demon. Then I'll make a little, I'll wipe away the salt a little bit.
Wipe away the salt.
I'm like, come on in. You a hot. You a hot demon. So today, Dave, together, we're going to be breaking down and discussing the 2005 Constantine film, which is partially or loosely based on Garth Ennis's Dangerous Habits, the 6-issue Hellblazer story arc, Dangerous Habits.
Yeah.
And, Constantine stars Keanu Reeves, Rachel Weisz, and Peter Stormare as Lucifer. And to this day, I don't care what anybody says, one of my favorite roles for Peter Stormare.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, just
he's one of the biggest highlights of the film.
Oh, yeah. Simple, but impactful. He did the job and it came off so fucking good. I still remember sitting in the theater in 2005 and I'm like, that's fucking good. Who is this guy? And that's before I even knew who he was, because I wasn't really aware of who he was. He wasn't really on my radar. I know he was in a few films that I had watched, but he wasn't really a household name. But after I saw his portrayal of Lucifer, I was sold. And ever since then, I try to watch everything he's involved in, because he's an interesting actor. He definitely has a very unique approach.
Oh, for sure. And his chemistry with Keanu Reeves was just on point.
Oh, yeah.
Like, well, my favorite
he carried
parts,
that scene. I mean, yeah. he really did.
My favorite part is when he interacts with Keanu Reeves, and it's like, it's weird because, like, you're right, he's not very well known, but he's very known for, before this, he was very known for bit parts where he plays very eccentric roles.
Right.
And his portrayal of Satan is absolutely at least one of my top two favorites.
Yeah.
Portrayals of Satan.
Oh, yeah. I would agree with that without a doubt. Now, this film is directed by Francis Lawrence, and it has been a source of controversy among Hellblazer fans since its premiere. And I totally understand the outrage by some.
Yeah.
They changed so many elements that make John Constantine who he is at his core. From a filmmaker's and studio side of things, taking us back to 2005, I get why these changes were made. I understand them. The changes took many of those character imperfections, though, that we are all drawn to when it comes to Constantine, and made them more attractive for mainstream audiences of the time. You have to remember, 2005 was a different time completely when it comes to how you market protagonists. This wasn't the anti-hero era yet. This isn't the era where you can have a bad guy or a guy that had moral dilemmas. Usually those aren't your heroes that you try to pawn off to the mainstream. A studio would never do that in 2005.
No.
It wasn't until Michael Bay's 2006 Collateral film. I take that back. I believe it was 2004 is when that movie came out with Tom Cruise and Jamie Foxx. It wasn't until that movie, when it did very well with a lot of box office moviegoers, when they saw Tom Cruise, America's golden boy, with that grinning, winning smile every 30 seconds, played a bad guy. It threw people off and they're like, I don't understand this. it bothers me, but holy shit, I like it.
Yes.
And that's the movie that changed the perception for a lot of studios. They said Tom Cruise just played a convincing bad guy and people liked it. Before then, you would never do something like that. So if Hellblazer would have been produced maybe 2 or 3 years after that, I think we would have gotten a very different Constantine, one that was more true to the roots, more sincere to the source material.
I do agree with you that basically if it was made 2 years after that, we probably would have gotten a more true to art Constantine.
Yeah.
But there's something about this movie that really, if they were to do that, I think it would lose its charm.
Well,
honestly.
Well, and we're going to get into that, Dave, because this movie, despite the fact that it's not really, in my opinion, it's not really a Hellblazer movie, the movie does have its charm.
The movie does
have its likabilities. But I understand from the filmmaking side what they were trying to do. The director mm-hmm. thought that these little changes would keep the essence or spirit of Constantine intact while making it more palatable for the mainstream. But in actuality, it makes him a completely different character in almost every way. When you think about it, the muck and mire is where Constantine is at his best.
Yes.
The decisions Constantine makes is what defines him. Good intentions that go south, or sometimes selfish decisions that go even further south. They took all those complicated imperfections and watered them down by turning Constantine into a bit of a victim. Poor Constantine saw things as a child and he committed suicide because he was confused. He was a confused little boy. And I'm watching this saying, no, no. Constantine is responsible for his actions. He's not a victim to them. He causes most of them.
Yes.
That's the beautiful thing about his character, because it's a snapshot of reality. So many of us are the cause of our own problems. And Constantine is damned because he's fucked up. He was in complete control and he made a poor decision. That's what is interesting about John Constantine. He's not a bad person. He's not an evil person. He's a regular person that makes bonehead decisions at times. And this movie, in my opinion, robbed him of his true characterization.
And it's true. I mean, you're right. That it is part of John's characteristics, and it goes into the core theme of who John Constantine is.
Yeah.
And if you were to put this version of Constantine to like the comic, or even by today's standards with Matt Ryan,
right,
he would almost be like a Elseworlds character, something like, you know, Superman Red Son.
Okay.
Batman Year One,
mm-hmm.
stuff like that. And that's how I kind of view this movie, is kind of like it's an Elseworlds title.
Yeah.
But there's still something here that harkens to Hellblazer.
No, there is, without a doubt. But my point is that you take away all that ugliness that studios and the mainstream weren't ready for in 2005. They weren't ready for our heroes to be covered in filth. They wanted them to be perfect. We were still stuck on, and people may disagree, because Batman was just blowing things up. Christopher Nolan's Batman. But even Batman is a knight. He's a dark knight, but he's a hero through and through. He has his issues.
Yes.
But not like Constantine. We weren't quite ready for a character like Constantine yet.
No, not yet.
And a good comparison of what they did with him, or a good analogy, I should say, would be, let's say a director, and this isn't a jab at Zack Snyder, because I don't feel like he did this with Man of Steel. But let's say a director made a Superman flick, and Superman still loved the world. And he was optimistically naive at times, you know, stands for truth, justice, blah, 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 right? But he killed bad guys. That's not Superman.
Yeah.
That's not Superman. Yes, he's optimistic and he loves people and he's for the greater good, but he kills people occasionally. Ah, well, I blew that guy up. Collateral damage. That's not Superman. And that's what I feel like they did with Constantine. They try to hold his essence together through a narrative that would feel like Hellblazer, but
yes,
rather than going through with what makes him Constantine, they robbed him of his true spirit. And that's the reason why I'm speaking from a Constantine fan perspective right now. And that's the reason why so many Constantine fans had such a hard time swallowing the pill that Lawrence was attempting to drug us with in 2005. Now, that being said, Dave, to be more positive, and not because I want to be positive for positive sake, but because I like this movie. I might even say love this movie. Understanding filmmaking back in 2005, this wasn't a bad movie. It was a nice homage to the film noir horror and, you know, Faustian literary themes. And the cinematography was absolutely amazing. In fact, the cinematography might be my favorite part of the entire movie because it's telling a parallel story of its own right alongside the rest of the movie. Now, Dave, you kind of get my general thoughts on how I feel about this movie. And I know that you had some likes that you wanted to share, but what were your general thoughts on this film before we move forward? I want to get your cohesive thought bubble, if you will.
My general thoughts on this movie actually run parallel to yours. It's kind of like, I understand why hardcore Constantine fans do not like this film because it's not John. I understand that. However, I'll be honest, I've watched this movie multiple times, and on a filmmaking side, it is just a really well done film.
Yep.
Especially when you take it into the equation that this was Lawrence's directorial debut.
Yeah.
Before this, he was doing like music videos.
Yeah.
And the ability to what he got out of his cast.
Have you noticed that music video directors always have such a great
eye?
They have a great eye for imagery.
Yeah. And
if they are able to make that crossover into theatrical films, they usually have a very cool style to their filmmaking.
And if you look at like how he set everything up visually, you can see his roots in music videos where it's basically very visual and everything else. But on top of that, when you take a look at the cast that he had Keanu Reeves. We talked about,
Peter Stormare.
He had Shia LaBeouf. He had...
Who was a big deal back then.
Yeah. And then like on top of that, the actress he got. Also,
Tilda Swinton, Rachel Weisz. Yeah.
All that cast, what he was able to pull from that cast, and the fact that he had such a talented cast around him was amazing when you look at the finished product.
Yeah, I'm a little jealous. I'm not going to lie, because I love Rachel Weisz, and one of my favorite actors, even up to this very minute, Tilda Swinton. Fuck, dude, she's great.
One of the most talented actresses.
Yeah.
I've never seen.
I call her an actor. That good, you're just thrown into that thespian title, actor. And she's one of them. You just throw her right in there.
Yeah, you just throw her right in. And she is one of the best actors out there.
Yeah.
And this was like in the early days. This was before they actually, if you think about it, a lot of this cast, they didn't hit it big till after this.
Yeah, even Jamon, I believe that's how you say his name, who played Papa Midnight.
Oh, man. Dude, Papa Midnight was awesome.
The imagery and everything they did when he popped into screen, the way they framed him, the way they lit him, it made me want a Papa Midnight movie. Can we get a spinoff, like, immediately, please?
The nightclub scene with him and John was freaking phenomenal.
And honestly, Dave, if any other studio was running this, because we already know Warner Brothers just continues to fuck up things, and not because I don't like their movies. I like their movies for the most part. They never stick to their guns. They make a movie, they're like, 10% of the audience hated this. Prank caller. Let's throw everything. Let's burn down the studio and all the plans we had for sequels. Oh, not everyone liked it. Oh, we didn't make as much money as Marvel. Let's run away.
And it's sad.
Imagine what they could have done with this. This could have been a franchise within a franchise. You had Papa Midnight. You had the entire world laid out.
You had the storyline of Satan going on in the background because they didn't even touch on that. That wasn't – Satan wasn't a big – big bad villain.
This movie was designed, you can tell, by the writer and the director. This movie was designed to be an introduction.
Yes.
That's all it was. They were hoping for this to be the next big thing. And it made pretty good dollars at the box office, too.
And the thing that I like, too, is like every single time someone has told me, oh, this movie's horrible, this movie's horrible, I always tell them, well,
the movie's not horrible.
It's not horrible because you can pinpoint moments and scenes in this movie where people go, you know what? That's actually pretty damn cool. Like I tore down one person who was saying that, oh, it's horrible. It's not John Constantine. Did you enjoy that scene where the electric chair happened? Oh, well, that was cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Did you enjoy the scene where Papa Midnight first shows up and chokes a bitch? and they go, oh, that was cool. Yeah, he played a cool thing. Why is it horrible? Well, it's not John. Yeah. That was the overall thing.
And I get, again, like I said, that's why I started the show off like that. I get the arguments because I agree. I'm a hardcore Hellblazer John Constantine fan. I get it. But that doesn't mean the movie was itself bad.
Yeah.
I didn't hate the movie. It's hard for me to hate a movie that isn't bad. The movie isn't just not bad. It's actually good. This film is a textbook example of how to write a tentpole script, written, of course, by Kevin Broden and Frank Capello. In fact, Dave, if I were to teach a screenwriting class, the first day I would tell the students, don't write a single thing. I'm going to hand out a few scripts for you to read. I want you to read Godfather, Batman Begins, Jerry Maguire, Fargo, Wedding Crashers, and Constantine. Those are the films I would want them to read because they can learn something from each of them. Constantine is a great example of how to write a mainstream tentpole movie the right way. Don't read the Marvel movies of today.
Yeah, don't.
Because that's not how you write a movie. Those are nothing but exaggerated versions of TV scripts. Fluff. Those aren't it's movies. Fluff. It's fluff. It's filled with fluff. There's very little substance in a lot of those movies today. And then I'd be like, read all this. Don't write anything. I get the fuck out of here, you crazy kids. Come back with a script that I can read and enjoy. The inciting incident, okay, alone. Which, if people don't know what the inciting incident in a script is, basically it's the first 10 pages, the first 10 minutes of a movie, which you're supposed to write. It's called an inciting incident, and it needs to be the opening 10 minutes that will grab the audience immediately. Manuel the Scavenger finds a Spear of Destiny, gets hit by a car, keeps walking, kills cows as he's heading towards Los Angeles. Then we witness a demon exorcism and the introduction of John Constantine. Within those 10 minutes, we are introduced to the idea that the world is at a boiling point and something is about to go down. That is a textbook inciting incident.
Yes.
By the first act, we have an understanding of what is happening. The story is tidy because they use John's mythos as the frame of the narrative and Isabel's story as the picture. Through Isabel's story arc, we learn about John Constantine. That's how you tell a story about two different people. The act structure was very well crafted. I know people might say, what? What? A good script? But as we say a lot in this network, separate yourself from the material when you review it. I've heard throughout the years that the plot was muddled. I think they need to look up the definition of plot.
Plot, yeah.
A plot is a series of events, or I guess sequences, that make up a movie, right? There's nothing muddled about the plot. I don't think they know what a plot is. It's just a word they heard once that Ebert said in a review.
Well,
let me go through the plot real fast, yeah. Dave. John discovers that the demons are acting against the rules. John has cancer and will die and go to hell. John investigates the demon uprising. His investigation takes him to Isabel. Isabel is the portal or gateway for the son of Lucifer to enter into our world. John commits suicide to summon Lucifer. John sacrifices his own soul to save Isabel and her sister. John flips the bird as he ascends to heaven. Lucifer says, hell no, he wants Constantine to live so he can screw up again and go back to hell. So he resurrects him, the end. How is that muddled? That is very fucking clear. That's the movie, right?
That is the movie.
And I just said it in 15 seconds. Mm-hmm. That's not a muddled plot. That's a very clear and concise plot. Most film critics and viewers find it very hard. And this is something you and I have come across, Dave, because we've been doing what shows now for almost 9 years.
Yeah,
and
pretty much.
Something we've come across now in the film writing circles and film critique circles is we find that it's very hard for them to separate themselves from the material. And you can't base your review for audiences on subjective reasoning.
Yes.
You can't. You have to base it on what they gave us and how it was executed. Mm-hmm. And on paper, everything they gave to us is a pretty good summer popcorn flick. I'm not saying this is Oscar-winning material. I'm saying it's a summer blockbuster flick done right.
Yeah, it's the fundamentals. It's all the fundamentals of what makes a good, well-done movie. Now, it might not be your cup of tea, but did you execute it properly? Yes.
And that's the question you got to ask yourself when you review a film.
Absolutely. It's not about like liking a movie, because if that were the case, then, you know, multiple franchises out there that, you know, all us fans love would have had Oscars
right
to them, and they don't.
Yeah. Black Panther would have won every Oscar last year. Not saying I like Black Panther. I'm just saying that everyone was blowing Black Panther, saying it should have won Oscars. And yeah. if we bestowed accolades on movies based on what you liked, then every single movie would be winning Oscars.
Would be winning Oscars.
Yeah. Now, the issue of John simply being the foundation or frame, as I said a few moments ago, this was probably the only problem I had with this movie. It's not a writing issue or even a structural issue. I you know what? Let me say it's more of a story decision issue. It's probably a better way of saying it. The fact that John was not really what pushed the story forward, that might be my only issue with this movie. And again, that's not a bad writing decision. That's just from a perspective of now being a Constantine fan. Not even his actions, when you really think about it, Dave, not even his actions really pushed the story forward. He was the resolve that would bring an ending. His actions would bring closure. But overall, the story was not really about him. It was about Isabel. And her connections to Mammon.
Yes.
He was the eyes of the audience, a way to introduce the strange demonic world to the viewers. And that was smart. Now, the reason why they did that, because at the time in 2004, none of this bothered me. Okay. And this is how I was able to figure this out. And the reason why, and we touched on this at the top of the show, the reason why this didn't bother me in 2005, that he was the eyes of the audience, a way for the audience to be introduced into the world of the supernatural, right? The demonic, the evil, what goes bump in the night. It was because in 2005, this was an introduction story to what I felt was going to be a series of films. And I'm sure writer Kevin Broden had intended this as well. Because if this had been an introduction, the idea that John was the introduction for John Constantine, more or less, right?
Yes.
Then I would say, okay, well, because he was our perspective and introduction into the world that we're in, I'm okay with this, because in the next movie, we can bypass that and it could be more about John Constantine.
Mm-hmm.
But we never got that.
But we never got it because it didn't. They, just like what you said, the studio got scared of that reaction from the audience and then pulled away as fast as they could.
Yeah, and I don't get that, because the film grossed $239 million worldwide from a $100 million budget. Now, that's not the greatest box office performance, but it's far from being a flop.
Yeah, when you take a look at the numbers, they succeeded.
Yeah, and this is just box office. We're not talking about DVD and Blu-ray sales. And never mind the fact that a film like this has longevity, because you're dealing with the John Constantine Hellblazer fandom. This movie to this date is still probably bringing in a fair amount of money.
Mm-hmm.
And there are so many stories out there that you can find on the interwebs as to why we never received a sequel. One report suggested at one point, I want to say 2014, that Keanu Reeves didn't want to do it. No, I take that back. 2008. In 2008, Keanu Reeves was reported as saying that there are no sequels he's interested in doing at this time. And that was 3 years after doing the 2005 Constantine film. So maybe that's one big reason right there. Maybe they had things in the works and the studio couldn't convince Keanu Reeves to come back. I know there was a lot of backlash in 2005 with Constantine. In fact, he said in 2014 he changed his tune, Keanu Reeves. He has been reported saying during a Reddit Ask Me Anything session, he said, "I loved Constantine. I loved playing Constantine. I wish there was a sequel with me in it." He said, "I really enjoyed playing that character. I know it's not the John Constantine from the graphic novels." That comment right there makes me feel like he felt slighted by the reaction in 2005.
Yeah.
And that's why, would you want to do something? If you did a movie and you put your heart and soul into it, and then people are like,
shitting on it,
would you want to do a follow up? Like,
yeah,
well,
exactly.
I'm like, well, people are like shitting on me for this movie. I don't want to do it. But now flash forward, you know, 10 plus years, the movie has managed to become a bit of a cult classic.
Yeah.
Like, has a cult following now. And now in 2014, Keanu Reeves is a very different person, not just as an actor, but as a pop culture icon. I mean, his popularity has soared. And now he's probably hearing a lot more positivity about this movie. Now he's saying, well, let me look at this again through different glasses.
Exactly. Constantine to me is one of those films that if I were to actually, just like what you said, teach a film class for me for film history, Constantine is one of those movies that will go down in history to me that where the audience affected how this movie would go on in the future.
Oh, it's the reason why we didn't get anything following up Batman versus Superman. Even though the movie blew the fuck up at the box office.
Yeah. And when you look at it,
even though most of the fans loved it.
Yeah, exactly.
But what happened? The studio did the exact same thing. Oh, people are shitting on it. Oh, we're going to
run away.
Take our ball and go home.
Exactly. Instead of, me and you have talked about this in multiple shows, instead of taking a risk and standing by your product,
yeah,
just weather the storm, and then basically you'll find out maybe in 2 years, oh, everyone wants this.
Yeah, but that's the reason why Warner Brothers will never be Marvel. It's why they will never, ever compete.
Yeah.
Unless we have new leadership, because they are very... They become very panicked over the fickle audience.
They're stuck in their ways.
And it's like, oh, you didn't like it. We only had 90% of the people that liked it. We want 100%.
Exactly. And it's a very old school way of thinking, because like that's how the old school studios worked. If you didn't succeed 100%, you were considered, you know, trash. And a lot of if you look throughout history, that's one of the things that a lot of actors and filmmakers were afraid of, is like one single bad review utterly destroys a movie and then you never see it again. And that's why, you know, in hindsight, that's why we get cult classics like this.
Yeah.
Because I guarantee you, if this movie was made today and you kept everything from this movie, it would be it would be received positively.
I agree. In fact, if they announced a Constantine 2 next week, it would be a viral sensation. It would hit the interwebs, and yeah, there'll be some negative Nancys out there.
There'll be negative Absolutely. Nancys, because people will say, oh, but it's Keanu Reeves' Constantine. Well, did you see what Keanu Reeves did in stuff like John Wick?
Yeah.
He can do it.
Yeah.
He can do it.
The Keanu Reeves equation is a very peculiar one.
It is.
Because I think we can all admit that he's not a brilliant actor. Is he a good actor? Yes. Is he capable? Yes.
Yes.
And the reason why he's had such a great career is because of management. Whoever is his manager should probably get more than just 10%. He should probably get 15%.
Yeah.
His management team is fantastic because they manage to find the right movies that work for him. They know what types of scripts will work for Keanu. Keanu will play, I don't want to say Keanu plays Keanu because he doesn't, but Keanu plays a specific role. You know what? You can compare him to Clint Eastwood. Clint Eastwood,
yes.
You can always count on Clint Eastwood to play Clint Eastwood. And I don't mean that as an insult. I mean, hey, we know what to expect from Clint Eastwood, and I think Keanu is the same way. And they do it convincingly. So it isn't a shrug of their capabilities as an actor. They know the roles they're capable of doing, and they do them very, very well.
Yeah.
Look at the franchises that Keanu has been a part of. And now with this influx of popularity because of the John Wick series, and now Keanu is just beloved by social media. He could do no wrong. He's a fucking saint. People just adore him. I feel like Constantine 2 would be a fucking success.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you compare it to like some of the Marvel films. It pretty much what they did was, if you look at Constantine, they did a pre-Marvel film.
Yeah.
They set stuff up for to show a bigger universe. And then they did a superhero origin story very similar to what Marvel did with a lot of their Marvel movies. You know, just like what you said, like the movie doesn't center around Constantine. It's basically a story of Isabel.
Right.
Constantine comes in. That's very much like if you look at the Marvel movies, look at Thor. The original movies aren't about Thor. It's about Jane Foster.
Yeah.
And like that succeeded. I mean, then we got like, now we have like three Thor movies plus one extra that's coming out, and everyone loves Thor.
Right. I think that they could make a Constantine movie, a sequel, and they could probably win over the naysayers, the people that were not fans of the first movie, because it's more than 10 years later. It would be a sequel rather than a reboot. They can shift some things around within the mythos of Constantine and introduce some of those more complicated, uglier sides, especially because we're talking about 2019. We're talking about 2020. The landscape has changed, and audiences accept very different types of protagonists as their lead, as the center of a story. And they could do a story where Constantine makes some questionable decisions and bring it back to the roots. It's not too late to do that. You can introduce him in the way you did. And yes, you can't go back and retcon his origins necessarily. You keep the psychic element and his ability to see, you know, the half breed demons. I mean, that the damage has been done, and that's not a horrible aspect. I understand you make changes in movies. No, it's not a deal breaker.
It's not a deal breaker.
The biggest deal breaker for me, as I said at the beginning of the show, is that you took away the ugliness, the imperfections, and wrapped him up in a blanket of Christian thought and values, and yes, what the Christian beliefs are based on. Suicide. And yeah, it worked for that movie, and you can continue that idea that those are the themes you introduced, the ideas of Christendom and Christian ideology. I mean, all of that you can still utilize, but you can bring that more imperfect side into the sequel movie and give people a Constantine film, the Constantine fans, I should say, that feels a little more true to the source material.
Yeah.
And if you look at Kevin Broden's IMDb page, there is a Constantine 2 listed.
Yeah, I did see a lot of fans have been pointing that out, that basically, oh, Constantine 2. But
I would be okay with that, Dave. I honestly, would I like to have Matt Ryan in a movie? Yes, because I feel like Matt Ryan embodies John Constantine in almost every way. He's not perfect. I feel like it's kind of hard to get a character like John Constantine perfect, because you're dealing with what, 30 some years of stories, and every fan is going to have a different idea of what is important when it comes to John Constantine. Well, he should have blonde hair, or he should walk a certain way, or the way he smokes a cigarette, or, you know, his voice should be this way, which baffles me. I heard someone say something about his accent and the way he says stuff, and I'm like, you realize we never heard him talk, right?
Yeah.
He's a comic book. So you're basing your idea of how he should talk on what? So Matt Ryan's portrayal, I feel like, is pretty fucking good.
Oh, yeah.
The decision to make him American and not give him an accent, I know didn't go over well. And it doesn't go over well with me either when it comes to John Constantine, but the damage is done. And if they want to do a sequel, because I feel like it's a guaranteed win, in my opinion, at the box office at this point, I would be okay with it. As long as they bring in some of those more nuanced aspects to Constantine's identity.
That's the big thing, is like, you got to at least bring in what made John Constantine the character. You know, there's more to it than just being British and smoking a cigarette.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, because I saw people say that on, I think, social media when Matt Ryan's Constantine joined Legends of Tomorrow. And the big thing was like, oh, he's smoking. Yay. Like, okay, listen, I get it. I understand that's a big part of his entire aura, you know, his bravado. The fact that he's fighting demons and finding time to always light a cigarette in between.
Tweet.
I mean, I love it. It just adds to that cool swagger, but it's also not something I'm going to be I'm a stickler for story more than anything.
Yes.
So as long as that as long as they always focus on story and heart, then I will enjoy the movie regardless. Now, Dave, let's take a really quick break. And then when we get back, we're going to jump into the cinematography of Constantine. We will be right back.
Who the hell do you think I am? Benedict Bloody Cumberbatch.
The Rain Man Show.
Says the bacteria are able to change and mutate so that the antibiotics we use against it no longer works. In the case of gonorrhea, it has slowly shown signs of resistance over the years.
How can we weaponize this and give it to Kim Jong-un? Oh, and Trump.
And Trump.
No, he's the president. I don't want to get sued or Kim fired or killed, assassinated, arrested.
Oh, God.
We'll just fly chemtrails full of super gonorrhea over North Korea. We'll that'll get them.
Chemtrails? Right? I will infect an entire nation. We will defeat North Korea by giving them gonorrhea. By actually having sex with each and every one of them.
I will fuck everyone in North Korea.
Okay, so Entertainment Earth. DC superhero John Constantine's Best of Figure with Collector Magazine number 35 is on sale through Entertainment Earth. The best figurines from the DC superhero collection are being relaunched in metallic poly resin with updated packaging, improved figurine bases, and updated magazines. The collection features a 1-21 scale figurines of DC Comics' greatest heroes and villains. Don't miss the DC superhero John Constantine number 35 Best of Collector figure. Look for the links for Entertainment Earth in our podcast descriptions and click through to Entertainment Earth.
The House of Mystery contains demons, angels, elementals, magicians, wizards, apparitions, adult language, and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not enter the House of Mystery.
All right, then. On with the show.
All right, welcome back to the House of Mystery. Hello, Dave. How are you?
Doing good.
All right. During break, we were smoking some cigs and having immoral relations with hot demon
ladies.
Yeah. And I guess for you men, maybe, if you're a demon man, are there demon men and demon women, or is it more like gender neutral?
I think it's gender neutral because from the sound of it, the demons can just shapeshift.
Oh, okay. That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Not the demon. The fact that they can shapeshift in mid-act. That's just, please.
Like, one minute, you know, you got a hot demon, and then the next minute, you have Satan standing right in front of you.
That is truly horrific. All right. So let's talk about the cinematography that was performed, executed by Felipe Rosalote. First off, his use of camera frame and symbolic imagery was top-notch. Is top notch, just fantastic work. I had forgotten when I originally watched this movie how great it was, and I don't think I've picked up this DVD. I don't think I've watched this DVD. I think the last time I watched this movie was probably 5 years ago. So putting it back in, watching it, I was wowed by the imagery.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, his background, if you take a look at his background, he's been in a lot of movies where the cinematography does have a certain style. He worked on the Sherlock Holmes movies. I know that.
Very stylized.
Very stylized. He worked on the new Harry Potter movies, which is very stylized. And if you look at it, he does have like that certain flair to his cinematography. One of my favorite scenes in this movie is the street scene where Rachel Weisz's character and Keanu Reeves as John first meet. And the whole street, the way it's lit and shot, gives you this creepy vibe that something really bad's about to happen. But if you think about it, look at the scene. It's a simple street scene. But the way it's shot and the way he chooses his angles at this point gives you this sense of like you're in a tight space. It gives a claustrophobic feeling.
Yeah. And he's done a lot of work with Tim Burton as well. He did work on, he was a cinematographer on Big Fish as well.
Yes.
And also Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. A lot of Tim Burton's movies rely a lot on imagery. So you can see that the studio and the director, Lawrence, was definitely going for a specific flair. They wanted someone that isn't just, hey, I'm going to point and shoot and go and do the basics. I have a key light, I have some fill, and then I have a backlight.
Yes. There's a certain style to it.
They wanted something that would actually tell its own story in tandem with the actual overt narrative as well. And if you look at some of those scenes, and I'm going to post my favorite on our webpage with this show when it goes live, rainmandigitalmedia.com. If you're listening on iTunes or any other podcast app, you should be able to find those images on our webpage. But you can see that there were lines that were closed off in the frames, possibly to evoke a feeling of claustrophobia.
Claustrophobia and uncomfortableness.
Right. Due to the nature of evilness closing in on our heroes, you always got the sense that something was in the shadows coming for them.
Yep.
You had frames within frames. Sometimes settings or backdrops looked like comic panels and not in the hokey Hulk way, the Incredible Hulk way, where they actually drew in the panels and then, hey, look, guys, it's a comic book movie. Hey, can you tell? Because I use panels to do transitions and
not
stuff.
Not that. Yeah.
No, it was actually a creative way to give off or pay homage to the comic book itself, because there were various moments where you would have a frame above Constantine or it would encompass Constantine and there would be a bigger frame over the smaller frame that Constantine is in. And it looked like Lawrence and Filippi were actually trying to give it that comic book look without without taking you out of the moment. Because let's be honest, when you try to remind people that this is a comic book, and you've seen that quite a bit of times, quite a few times throughout the run of comic book movies, it kind of just takes you out.
It takes you out.
Takes you out of the movie. So if you want to play homage to the original graphic novel, that's a very creative way to do it. And if people have not noticed that, Dave, I would say, hey, go back and rewatch and keep an eye open for those framing shots. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, subtlety. There was a quote I remember about like his type of cinematography work that he does is subtlety brings out. Was it subtlety brings out the masterpiece? And like
that's what he said, Filippi.
No, it was someone that actually critiqued Filippi's cinematography. So his the way he frames everything and makes sure that every little detail matters brings out the best out of everything in the frame.
Yeah.
And like they pointed out that if you look at his style, like say, oh, it was in the article, they mentioned Interview with a Vampire.
Oh,
the way he shot all those dialogue scenes, right?
Yep.
And you compare it to Constantine, it's the same way. It gives that uncomfortability. He knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And he makes sure that every little angle makes the character come out. It's just not up to the actor. It's up to him as a cinematographer to make sure, okay, I want to make this character feel very uncomfortable or very sinister.
Yeah.
And if you compare like the scene between like Lestat when he's talking to the reporter in the end and John, when Satan is talking to him and telling him what he's going to do to him in hell, they're very similar.
Yeah.
Why? Because Felipe understands what he needs to get out of that scene.
Yeah, you got
to
evoke feelings and emotions.
You got to evoke feeling with your, and you with do your that, frame.
You do that more with imagery than you do with actual words. And there was also this scene. It was a, I guess there was a lot of bird's eye views, you can call them, showing that God is watching, judging as John makes decisions. Will he be worthy or will he be doomed to go to hell for all eternity? So there was a lot of shots like that hovering high above John as he's walking. One shot that specifically stands out for me is the opening introduction of John Constantine. When you had that tight close up on the cigarette and it drops in slow motion from the cab down to the street, then the camera goes to a bird's eye view shot way above, and it just looks daunting. And you have the sides of the building creating the frame, and John Constantine is completely diminished and tiny because he's about to enter into a world that's much bigger than he is. Yeah. It's just, it's so symbolic. It's fantastic. And that's why it hurts my soul when people say this movie sucked, because it far from sucked.
Oh no, yeah. I mean, I really, this is one of those movies that when people tell me it's bad, I use it as a gauge to see
how intelligent they are.
Yeah, as a film critic and filmmaker, I really do use it to gauge people.
Here on House of Mystery, we are asshole elitists.
Oh yeah, when you talk about filmmaking to me, I'm a very elitist person, because I'm like, going, okay, what's your favorite movie? It's Transformers. Oh, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
But like, the thing I really like too, in parallel with that scene, so you get this sense that God is watching him, right?
Yeah.
And then you get the scene in the I think it's the conference room where he's trying to bluff. I think the character, is it Beelzebub? I think.
Balthazar.
Balthazar. When he tries to actually, when he's bluffing him and telling him that, oh, I'm going to send you to heaven and you're a demon, so that's going to be terrible for you. Yeah. And like, you compare that to the first scene where God is watching him, and then the fact that he chose, or Felipe chose angles to kind of show, yeah, this is a bluff scene. We all know that John is giving him a crock of shit, because John is posed as this imposing figure, and he chooses like the angle where John stands over Balthazar and holding up his hand up like a preacher.
Yeah.
And it's like he knows what to evoke.
Yeah, there's a lot of great decisions involved in this movie. There's allegorical imagery to convey thoughts on Christendom and the church. Just powerful imagery.
Oh, that's all the way around. With, Rachel Weisz in the church. That was like, you felt like you were in a cathedral, like sitting there with the Pope or something.
Yeah. It just feels like they were trying to say something subtly within the subtext as well. So it worked really well. Now, some things on the overall production. Producer Lauren Shuler Donner had developed the film as far back as 1997. And I'm glad they didn't make it then. Nicolas Cage was originally attached to star in the lead role.
Wow.
Now, in 1997, Nicolas Cage was a big swinging dick.
Yes,
and
he was.
And Nicolas Cage was actually okay then. He was a decent actor. He did things, much like Keanu Reeves, he did things that he was capable of doing good. Doing well, I should say. But as Constantine, I can't see it.
You know what? It would have been interesting if you take into account what he was able to pull off in Fear and Loathing. It was, he did another movie.
Don't get me wrong. Nicolas Cage can play tormented, broken characters very well. He can. I'm not saying that, but I don't think, you know, it's hard, Dave, because we're talking about 1997, Nicolas Cage. I mean, this is Con Air Nicolas Cage. This is Face Off Nicolas Cage. This was a fun era. It was a little schlocky, but it was fun. So it would have been a very different movie if this was made in 1997 with Nicolas Cage. I don't feel like it would have been horrible for that time, but I don't think it would have held up as well as this movie has. Dave, this movie came out more than 13 years ago, and the movie, in my opinion, still holds up.
Yeah.
The CGI looks good. The production value is still good. this movie holds up. If you didn't know any better and you put this movie on, you'd probably say, it was probably made about 4 or 5 years ago. It definitely holds up. Whereas if this was made in 1997 with Nicolas Cage, I feel like it would have felt like 90s funk. It would have had 90s funk all over it.
Yeah, because when you think about it, if Nicolas Cage were to actually play John Constantine, I mean, technically we got that with Sorcerer's Apprentice.
He'd be like, I'm John Constantine.
John Constantine.
He has a little bit of a William Shatner flair to him sometimes.
Yeah, it's over the top. And unfortunately,
he shakes a lot. Too bad the people at home don't have video, Dave, because they would have saw me do my Nicolas Cage, Nicolas Cage from Gone in 60 Seconds. When he shakes his hands.
When he shakes his hands a lot.
Yeah. It would have been a very different movie. Now, Nicolas Cage in 2019, who's had a little bit of resurgence with Mandy and this other film coming out soon that's getting positive vibes already. Maybe he could do it, but I don't know.
I just don't think he would. I think he would. I think I would still rather want Keanu. If I actually had the choice, Keanu Reeves or Nicolas Cage, given the time frame and between the history.
Between the choices of Nicolas Cage and Keanu Reeves, I choose Matt Ryan.
I choose Matt Ryan. Always. There's only one thing. I choose Matt Ryan.
And the sad thing, it hurts me a little bit to say that, Dave, because I love Keanu Reeves and I love Nicolas Cage. I feel like he had a bit of a bad little spot there for a while between 2002 and 2012. He couldn't choose a good movie for the life of him.
Yeah, Ghost Rider.
I mean, God damn it. I don't know. He needs to. I hope he fired his management because they did not pick good movies for him at all. All right. So Constantine was also written, as we had already mentioned, using elements from Garth Ennis's Dangerous Habits story arc. With the inclusion of Papa Midnight, which was from the original Sins trade paperback.
Yes.
Other differences that they made, I'm going to cut through these really fast. I had a bunch of things I wanted to get into, but we're running out of time. Okay, this is where I feel like they could have really knocked it out of the park, a home run for us Constantine fans. And it was if they included the Michelle Monaghan scenes. Originally, Michelle Monaghan, the actress, who's actually a pretty big deal now, back then she was more low-key, was just getting started. She was actually in a lot of scenes as Constantine's lover, which was a half-breed demon named Ellie.
Ellie.
We already know who that is.
Yep, if you're a fan.
Based on the succubus Ellie in the Hellblazer comics. They were all cut from the film to make Constantine come off as more lonely. And that, I feel, is an atrocity. First off, I don't see where they would have put it. I feel like the cuts came in pretty fucking good, Dave, because the film feels pretty seamless. But if we would have had two or three sequences where John Constantine had a relationship with a demon, it would have given us that imperfected, let me backtrack. It would have given us the missing element that I spoke about at the top of the show, the imperfection, the ugly side that a lot of people weren't ready for in 2005. Can you imagine a hero, the protagonist of a movie in 2005, boning a demon?
It would have been cool.
It would have been a fucking game changer. And Warner Brothers cut it out. What happened to being innovative and taking risk? This movie probably would have gone over a little differently. It might have even won over a few of those John Constantine fans if they would have included that, because it would have said something. Forget about it being in your face. Focus on what it would mean for John Constantine, what it would say, without needing a lot of story or ground to cover it. It would say so much about John Constantine's character and his nature. It would immediately show us how complicated of a person this guy is.
Yeah, especially with dealing with another character out of his life. It would give more depth to who he is.
Right, and the film wouldn't have felt so closed in. As I had said, one of my biggest problems with this movie was that it was less about John Constantine and more about Isabel, and John Constantine was the framework, the audience's eyes into this world. I felt like it would have helped open up that door just a bit more into Constantine's reality, into Constantine's world, if we would have seen something a little more intimate.
Yeah. And honestly, any scene with Ellie would have been really cool. I think it would have been really awesome.
Well, she's a fascinating character to begin with.
Yes. Because, like, she is... I don't see, in my opinion, when it comes to Hellblazer, there is a lot of characters that are important to John's character growth. And Ellie is one of them.
Well, the thing that people don't understand, obviously they didn't understand when they made this movie, is that John Constantine has a lot of unsavory friends. He Yes. makes friends with demons. He makes friends with witches. He makes friends with anyone that he feels will help him along his way.
Yes.
And they took that element out and gave him a Q-type character. They gave him gadgets. They gave us a sidekick that was Chaz. And Chaz, and correct me if I'm wrong, it's been years since I read his storyline. Chaz was never a silly sidekick. Right?
No.
Yeah. And then they give him the Isabel character, who's also righteous and pure and clean. They did away with, like I said, the muck. They didn't want him befriending the interesting elements. If that makes sense, the interesting characters that might have been had questionable morality then. And I get it again, 2005, the mainstream, it would be a lot tougher pill to swallow. It's amazing how things just don't change. In 2005, all the way into 2019, Warner Brothers isn't really willing to take risk.
Yeah.
So on that note, we need to wrap this discussion on Constantine, the 2005 film. But first, we do need to give our final thoughts. In order to do that, let's leave the House of Mystery temporarily and head over to the Oblivion Bar. We're going to get a few drinks. Say hello to some hot demon chicks. Hello.
Those are really nice.
Hello. There's Ellie. I won't cut you from my scenes. Come on over. All right. So let's get into this. Final thoughts plus rate the movie based on our rating system. Based on our new Rain Man digital rating system.
Okay. My final thoughts on this movie is it's much better than a lot of people give it credit for. And it's always been one of those movies that I think a lot of people kind of pass over and without even actually giving it a chance. Because there's a lot of stuff here that is really well done. The cinematography is great. Directing was great. Cast was fantastic. And the only negative that people will bring up is the fact, it doesn't follow what we know as fans in the comic. Okay, but is it a good story? It's very well paced. It's tightly put together. And you don't get muddled, quote unquote muddled. The story is pretty much straightforward. It's an introduction into John Constantine. This John Constantine, not the comic book. This John Constantine.
Yeah.
My final rating. Actually, you know what? This is going to be.
Do you remember our new rating system?
Yeah. This is going to be one of the first movies I give a relatively high rating.
Really?
I'm going to give it a 85.
Wow.
I think I should be. This is one of the movies that I think people should go back and watch. And then come to me and tell me that this is a bad movie.
Okay. So 80% is a hell yeah, thumbs up.
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's my first.
Yeah. All right. Let's see here. Dave, my thoughts have been sprinkled out pretty much throughout this entire discussion. I feel like the listeners out there probably, I feel like most people understand how I feel about this movie. I feel like it's an accomplishment. It's an underrated film. It does not get the credit it deserves. Is it a perfect Hellblazer movie? No. Is it a damn good tentpole fun film? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it every time I watch it. It holds up. Most movies from 2005, they just do not hold up. Whereas this one, I feel like the CGI, the acting, the story, all of it works. And I could just go on and on about the cinematography and the chosen color palette and what it says. This is an achievement. This isn't just a fun movie necessarily. This is a good film, a good flick. I give it a 71%. I almost want to give it a little higher, but I got to calm down there. I got to calm down. There are some issues, but overall, 71% is a hell yeah, thumbs up. And that concludes our discussion, and we're going to exit the Oblivion Bar and head back into the House of Mystery and go someplace. I don't know where we're going to go, but that concludes our discussion. I want to thank you, Dave, for joining me today.
Thank you.
And please find all of our shows, past and present, on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Just search House of Mystery. Thank you.
My name is John Constantine. I'm the one who steps from the shadows, all trench coat and arrogance. I'll drive your demons away, kick them in the bollocks, and spit on them when they're down, leaving only a nod and a wink and a wisecrack. I'll walk my path alone, because let's be honest, who'd be crazy enough to walk it with me?